Welcome back to Seller Performance Solutions. I'm Chris McCabe of eCommerce Chris. This week, instead of chatting up Leah McHugh, I've got Bradley Sutton of Helium 10, and welcome back to you as well. I think it's been a couple of years since you were on our podcast.
Good to be back.
That's my fault. I should have had you on many more times.
No worries.
We should do this once a month, I think.
Yeah. Well, that might be a little bit extreme, but yeah.
But you travel a lot, so we can't do that. Typical question I'm getting, I'm sure you are too, all the uncertainty, the non-fee increase, the challenges people have with Amazon changing their listings around, some of the AI they're experimenting with, ads costs rising, reimbursement tickets and reimbursement claims being handled in a completely different way. What are the kind of top one or two tips you give people for just getting through the rest of the quarter, let alone the rest of the year, because there's so much sand shifting under our feet?
Sure.
I think it goes for sellers of all kinds and even service providers. And even, I just got back from Seattle. Even Amazonians I talked to are kind of like, I don't know what's going to happen in a couple of months.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff I don't worry about. You know, like my philosophy is that the stuff that affects sellers universally, for the most part, I'm not worried about too much, no matter how quote unquote bad they are, because they affect everybody equally and we're all going to have to adjust in the same way. Like, for example, tariffs. Like in general, like for my categories that I sell in, almost everything I have in most of them come from China. And all of my competitors come from China. So I couldn't care less if the tariff's 50% or 10% or zero. We all have to pay the same tariff. And so to me, like, yeah, would I have to raise my price? Yes, but it's not something I necessarily worry about because I know all my competitors are going to have to do the same thing. That being said, where tariffs could come into issue is, are you selling in a niche where 30% of the sellers are from China, including you? The other 70% are India, Pakistan, South America or something. Well, yeah, you're going to have some thinking to do. But if that's not your niche, I would say don't worry too much. Just adjust accordingly, knowing that your competitors have to do the same. On the flip side, the one thing that I think is the most interesting new thing associated with the tariff is the taking away the de minimis law about the things that are under $800 being able to be shipped from China tax and duty free. That's mm-hmm. the backbone of Shein and Temu and stuff. Now that is something that affects, in the opposite way, a very particular group of sellers.
Right.
It doesn't affect American sellers at all in that we're not importing directly from China to customers. But now all of a sudden, the unfair advantage that Chinese-based sellers had is theoretically taken away, or at least part of it, where now, you know, if customers have to either clear customs on their own or the prices are going to be raised 30, 40% or something,
yeah,
and shipping times is longer, well, that's good, because for those people who were afraid of Amazon haul or Temu and Shein, you know, like the same products being available for a fraction of the cost, well, now the playing field is leveled a little bit. But Amazon fees, PPC costs, that kind of falls under the first thing. That's affecting everybody. We all have to pay the same PPC costs. We all have to pay low inventory fees and everything like that. And does it suck? Of course it does. But at the end of the day, well, we just got to raise our price. Now, if all of a sudden other platforms start getting popular and maybe people can offer products for less, well, that would be an issue. But if we're all,
right,
for those whose main platform is Amazon, I hate those fees, but it doesn't matter because my competitor is paying that same exact fee. And so we just all got to raise our prices together.
I suppose if you have a large competitor who can afford to not raise their prices because they expect you to drop away because they can beat you on price until they snuff you out, I suppose that's the kind of problem.
Yeah. Well, I'm not selling any of those kind of categories, so right, where I have to worry about big, humongous sellers. But yeah, if you're trying to sell some collagen peptides, you could probably be squeezed out with some of those big boys there.
Yeah. So, I mean, that kind of gets the tariffs part of it out of the way. But what about, I mean, most people, the uncertainty, a lot of it's coming from Amazon. Like, you already,
sure,
kind of don't know what's coming down the pike. Leah and I have had random ASINs taken away because of, I don't know if they're automation experiments, things that they're doing with AI. Yeah, of course, in theory, they eventually iron those kinks out. But if you're losing money in the meantime, you know, then that's less resources you have to throw at other problems, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
there's already that for 2025. On top of that, some of these other challenges. So are you hearing people say, we're going to run leaner and meaner, we're not going to expand into another category, we're not going to launch a new accessory to go with a product that's already selling well? Because that's what I hear people doing. which means that the marketplace isn't going to grow as much as it possibly could, which presumably Amazon wants year over year growth from as many sectors as possible.
I haven't heard of that too much. What I think you'll see less of potentially is some of just the off the street people who are just, hey, let me put $1,000 together and launch on Amazon. That's becoming increasingly those who are established in niches. I don't think they should do anything differently unless, like I said, what you were talking about, as far as if you're trying to get into these niches where there's big players who can afford to play price wars and different things and squeeze out the little guy. Well, in the past, maybe I would have, or somebody would have gone into those niches. But now in the new normal, yeah, you might not launch a product or not try and go into this subcategory that maybe a couple years ago you might have thought about. You got to look a little bit more. The riches are in the niches, right? So
yeah.
I think that you're going to see people do that. And then my big thing is marketplace diversification. A couple years ago, it was like, hey, Walmart is something you should expand to. And I think you still should sell on Walmart. But my number two nowadays is going to be TikTok Shop. I mean, and sometimes, in a lot of situations, TikTok Shop is way higher ceiling than expanding to Walmart. I know a lot of people who are actually even surpass their Amazon sales on TikTok Shop, which you would never have on Walmart. Like one out of 1,000 might SKUs on Walmart might outsell Amazon. But like half of the people I talk to sometimes, if they're doing it right, they meet Amazon. So I think that's going to also help because your profitability is more on TikTok Shop. And that takes some of the burn away from maybe losing some of your profit on Amazon. Or if you're making more profit on TikTok Shop, you still come out even and you can get actually extra traffic on Amazon. There's still people like myself who I'm not sure if I fully trust TikTok Shop to get my product to me, but I'll maybe be inspired on TikTok and then go to Amazon and just buy it. So what happens is Amazon sellers, they get their regular Amazon products boosted by advertising and having their products on TikTok.
Oh yeah, for sure. And there's been a rise in consultants or service providers who help boost your presence on TikTok Shop to boost your Amazon sales, right? It is kind of funny that for years, Walmart was trying to catch up to Amazon. And now there's another problem with TikTok Shop or falling behind them. And that's a hot topic. I think I was just talking to a news reporter who told me they wanted to talk to you about the same thing. This is something that's going to be a big subject for the rest of this year into next year. And you're going to have to play the influencer marketing game 10 times better than you did. I mean, this is kind of leading into my question about product research, but product research must be 10 times more intense now with competition and with these other challenges. You have to get it right the first time. Is that fair to say or no?
I think overall, research, any kind of research, keyword research, product research, analytics, is you got to put a lot more effort just because, I mean, Helium 10 is partly at fault about that. That is the democratization of data that previously vendors only maybe had access to or something. Amazon themselves have released so many data points and so many different tools. And then Helium 10 has shown those and even doubled down on making our own stuff where it's like the level of insights you have about niches, whether it's product research or keyword research, is so advanced that if you aren't at an advanced level, you could be missing out because your competitors probably are doing these things, especially now that Amazon has released so many new data points, be it search query performance and other things. And so I think that's important, just the bread and butter. But at the same time, like one thing I would just, I don't know why I want to use the word admonish, but just maybe suggest to some people, I think too many people are getting distracted by a lot of the new shiny stuff that's not yet fully impacting sales. Like, for example, I see just so much talk about Rufus and things.
Yeah,
which
Rufus.
Anything as Amazon sellers that could help increase our conversion rate or sales 1% or 0.5% here, 1%, you got to consider it. That's the crux of keyword research and stuff. And so I'm not saying that like minor things, but the amount of attention I see out there about Rufus and stuff, where first of all, there's nothing 100% documented. I mean, there's a lot of documents about how Amazon came up with Rufus, but there's no proof of exactly what is in Rufus and what is powering it. And then overall, buyers just aren't using it that much. I did a poll too amongst 100 Amazon Prime members and like 6% use Rufus to actually make a decision. Because honestly, it kind of sucks. Like from a buyer's viewpoint, I tried to ask it some questions. It's terrible right now. That being said, you still got to consider, like I said, it doesn't matter that only 5% people are using it. Hey, you want to get any advantage you have. And so I would just say, hey guys, study these things that people are talking about, Rufus. It's good stuff. And it's important to understand what is changing. but do not do that at the expense of some of the bread and butter, like your regular keyword research and analyzing the Amazon data points. Because right now I see a mismatch with how much press or activity these subjects get compared to the actual amount of impact that it's going to give you. And especially if it's at the expense of what is guaranteed to help your sales and profitability.
Yeah. I mean, some of the AI stuff, I think it's just a sexy topic.
Exactly.
Some of it's clickbait, some of it's serious. For the casual or average observers, sometimes they might run together and people might be afraid, like fear of missing out.
Exactly.
That if they don't get in on AI now and figure out exactly what it can do for you right now, then they're going to struggle to catch up down the road, which I sort of understand that because I talk to a lot of brands who don't understand things like appeal strategy when they lose an ASIN or, God forbid, lose their whole account. But
yep.
When they have a major, let's say a major account health problem or a major problem with a suspension, when they're not up on current suspension trends and appeal strategy and they're behind, then all of a sudden overnight, they have to catch up really quickly, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That is kind of a worthwhile fear, but you don't want to spend all your time on Rufus and none of the time on the fundamentals, right?
I mean, yeah, for sure. Have you done, speaking of suspensions, there's been some crazy, not suspensions, but hacking of accounts. I've never seen so many big accounts hack. You know, like there was a guy named Ivan who put about in LinkedIn about how his $80 million account got hacked. And then I've talked to Helium 10 Elite members who got their accounts broken into, even though they were doing stuff that was right, like two-factor and authentication and stuff. And I've heard rumblings that like Amazon's kind of worried about what's going on because getting your account hacked and your bank account changed, I mean, that's worse than having your account suspended for a week or two because you could just lose all your money.
Could lose the money. I mean, Amazon was supposed to, and they did put some of this stuff in place. I mean, account security used to be way worse than it is now, for one thing. They were supposed to flag, like if your bank account suddenly went to an overseas account, they're supposed to kind of freeze everything.
Mm-hmm.
We did see some good examples. I mean, we talk a lot of crap about Amazon failing sellers, but they did put in some good ways of kind of catching some of this stuff where certain accounts, yeah, they froze them. They didn't unfreeze them quickly enough. We had to help some people with appeals with like, okay, look, we got the bank account switched back to the proper one. Now we need the rest of our account back so we can go back to selling and it would take a few days. Situations like that, they got better at preventing any damage from occurring. But I still hear from people, I'll give you two kind of points. Mm-hmm. I still hear from people who have an email as the primary email on their account, which is visible to the public. It's on their website or they're using it to email people. The email on your Seller Central account, right? The primary email on the account should be something that only you or your coworkers know. It's not used outside of your organization.
Oh, that's a good point.
That just increases the likelihood of somebody trying to spoof from your account or try to make it look like an email came from your email address when it didn't. And they can try to dupe or confuse Amazon with that or simply phishing emails that one of your employees, maybe all of you were up on security and you trained everybody, but it only takes one person making one mistake one occasion. So it's that. And then it's also people have been adding way too many services, service providers, consultants, whatever, as user permissions.
Yeah.
And not even thinking about the potential implications. I still hear from sellers who are suspended almost every day. They want to share their credentials with me. Here's my password. This is how you get into my Seller Central account without any kind of recognition that this is awful floppy security. And I understand maybe they didn't think about it. And they're panicked and they just want me to jump into their account as quickly as possible. You don't want to share your credentials with anyone. If you're adding somebody as a user, there's a right way to do that.
Yeah.
You do not give your credentials to other people like that. So I understand some of them are newer and maybe that's just a gap in their understanding. But unfortunately, it's another one of those things where it's like a couple of things Amazon could be doing better, things sellers could be doing better. And the gap in between those two things creates friction and confusion where a black hat or a fraudster can jump in and create damage. I mean, it is cyclical. It's kind of trendy. You'll hear about this once or twice a year, a bunch of accounts compromised.
Yeah.
Just one last point on this topic. When a lot of accounts are compromised at the same time, sometimes Amazon or Seller Performance will make mistakes. They'll sanitize and sanitizing the account means resetting the password or making you reset your password. Sometimes they do it more than once. So you kind of get back in the account and you fix it. And then they sanitize it again just to be sure. And then you have to do it again. And it just creates more confusion. Those mistakes are just more likely to happen when there are dozens or hundreds or maybe low thousands of accounts that are sanitized, that are compromised all at the same time. Yeah. That's kind of my short take on that. But you don't just stay in a loop with seller support cases and emailing seller performance cues. Those are escalations that have to be dealt with quickly. So the only other thing I was going to tell you and people that you share this with is that things like getting reviews removed that have nothing to do, you know, something Amazon did wrong, or being attacked with fake negative reviews, stuff like that. People are still using very low tier, low level solutions for that. Seller support case, and then posting on LinkedIn, nothing works. I did what I was supposed to do, and none of it. If you only open seller support cases or email performance queues, or you write to the Jeff@Amazon email, or you do all that low level, run of the mill stuff that never gets anything accomplished, then yes, of course, you're not going to get the review taken down. Or let's just say you're being attacked from a competitor and you're trying to report. I don't know how much in your forums and your groups, Helium members are saying, I'm being attacked by a competitor. They're screwing with the dimensions of my product so that everything's oversized now, or whatever it might be. Their detail page is getting defaced and that sort of stuff.
That's why we have the tools in like Helium 10 alerts. And one of it was a Helium 10 elite member who had his account hacked. He was like, thank goodness for Helium 10 alerts, because his phone started blowing up like in his middle of the day. He's from Israel. Mm-hmm. And so it was his middle of the day. But I guess the hackers were like, oh, let's just do this at nighttime in the USA. They didn't realize he was in Israel. And he said his phone started blowing up with like, hey, your price has been changed. That was what they were doing at first. They changed the price all lower. They got into his account and then changed the price. And so he started getting just blown up with Helium 10 alerts and saying, hey, your price is changing. That's how he knew somebody had gotten into his account. And then, like you mentioned, Amazon changing dimension. That's not even somebody hacking. It's just all of a sudden some random employee at Amazon warehouse, at a warehouse somewhere, just remeasures it while they're drunk or something. And then they say, oh, yeah, this is not 19 inches long. It's 21 inches long. And then guess what? That if that goes unchecked, we're talking hundreds, even thousands of dollars of difference over a few months on your fulfillment fees. And that's where the alerts that Helium 10 gives comes out too. On one side, it's good. I'm like, all right, hey, that's more validation of why you need Helium 10. But on the other side, as an Amazon seller myself, I'm like, why in the world? Like, how does Amazon let these kind of things happen? Kind of sucks.
Exactly. Any last words of advice you have for our listeners that are struggling with any of these?
Just issues,
revenue generation, listing, anything.
Just as what I said before is keep your blinders on almost. Know what's going on in the world of AI and different things and new things that are coming, but make sure you're not doing that at the expense of what the fundamentals on what you know works on Amazon. And then also ask yourself something we haven't talked about today, but I think is fresh in my mind is, gone are the days where you just put a label on something and have instant success on Amazon, regardless of if you're doing keyword research and stuff. You've got to be building a brand more on Amazon. So how can you talk to customers more? How can you connect with customers? Something that I just started talking in my talks I do when I'm speaking on stage is an experience I had where I just got hit in social media with a random video about some like super expensive jeans where like it's probably more than one jeans is more than I spend in like 10 jeans in my past, but it worked. And now I'm pretty much only going to buy those jeans for the rest of my life. It was something from Japan. It was like this really crazy, cool thing. And that doesn't 100% translate to the e-commerce experience, but there are different ways that you can produce that same effect, either through your influencers or through your own story, where you never thought about, hey, am I telling a brand story with this coffin shelf? Or maybe I never thought about that with my brands, but you've got to ask yourself, what can you do to just like make customers for life and make organic advocates of your brand? And it's going beyond keyword research. It's going beyond having a nice package. And so if you can answer that question and come up with something, you're going to be ahead of like 95% of the competition out there.
Words to live by. All right. Bradley Sutton of Helium 10. Thank you so much. Best place to reach you for people who have questions on this or anything else.
Best place is my Instagram, Serious Sellers Podcast. Obviously, that's the name of our podcast too. You can hit me up there, but Serious Sellers Podcast on Instagram, and then just under my name on LinkedIn is where I'm usually at.
All right, man. Thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it. And thanks again, everyone, for listening to Seller Performance Solutions. We will talk to you again next week.